Hey there, friend. My name is Bartek, and you're listening to a somewhat rare English episode of Compilator. Before we dive into today's episode, I have three facts about Montana I'd like to share with you. Number one, it's the birthplace of David Lynch, the man who created and directed Twin Peaks, as well as the second best thing we got to Jodorowsky's Dune. Number two, according to Frank Zappa, Montana is an excellent place to farm dental floss. Number three, it's where today's guest is calling from. Welcome, Carson.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to talk. I'm sorry to make you do it in English, but your English is probably better than my Swedish, so probably the right compromise.
I'm sure the listeners of this podcast have been listening to me hype up HTMX for the last year or so. So I'm thrilled to have Carson with us today. Carson is the man behind HTMX. Would you like to say a few words about yourself before we dive into?
Yeah, sure. My name's Carson Gross. I live in Montana, and I teach at Montana State University, and I run a consulting company. And HTMX is an outgrowth of an older library that I worked on called Intercooler.js, which was sort of the same idea, but was very jQuery specific. HTMX was an attempt to break Intercooler's dependency on jQuery, since JavaScript had gotten a lot better since I had initially written Intercooler.js. And thankfully, it's taken off and become much more popular, particularly initially with the Django community. But I'm very happy to see it branching out into other groups. I think it's a really good library to consider if you have a preferred programming language that isn't JavaScript. So one thing we talk about in the HTMX groups is HOWL, which is a H-O-W-L, which is short for hypermedia on whatever you'd like. And the idea there is that if you adopt HTMX and the hypermedia approach that it takes, you can use whatever programming language you'd like on your backend. You don't have that pressure from a JavaScript heavy front end coming at you, making you think, okay, well, maybe I should share logic between the front end and backend, and then I might as well do the backend in JavaScript. And so, I was one thing, I'm a programming languages person. That was what I studied in grad school. And I'm a polyglot. I like lots of different programming languages and different approaches to building things. And so I've been very happy to see lots of different groups getting into it. One of the big ones is the .NET community, which I know is your primary focus. And so I'm happy to see HTMX being picked up there as well.
My journey with HTMX started roughly a year ago. I'm not sure how I stumbled upon it. It was probably on Twitter when I was back on Twitter. And it solved a very, very specific pain point for me. And that is that if you're a .NET developer and want to create rich web apps, you have to go to something like React or Vue or, well, something node-based that forces this whole API plus JavaScript client architecture, which means you now have two stacks that you have to know. You have to know the backend stack and the frontend stack, and you have to have two sets of toolchains, and you have to have two CI/CD pipelines. So HTMX solved that for me because it doesn't require a separate stack. I can just send HTML down the line. And I haven't done that since like 2010. So it was a blast from the past, and I forgot how fun web development is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem. I've gotten that from if you grew up with the web, earlier, if you were around in the early 2000s, and maybe even in the late 2000s, there was just the sort of standard way to build web apps that was very HTML oriented, and it had its issues. And that's one reason why single page application frameworks like React and Vue have become so popular. There were usability issues basically with this, the full page refresh clunkiness that people associate with those web 1.0 applications really, unfortunately, I think pushed a lot of people away from it. But there were some really good things, particularly the developer experience, was very good in many ways. And it let you do, you didn't have to have this front end back end split, which is, it allows you to be more of a full stack developer and take ownership over an entire feature rather than just being, someone who just does the API or someone who just does the front end. Or even if you're doing both sides, having two different, very different mindsets when you're building both of those things that is sometimes forced on you by the single page application approach can kind of, just depending on how your head works, can cause friction. So
the 2010s were a crazy time in that aspect. And my pet theory is that the whole venture capital craze pushed everyone to assume they would need to scale everything to billions of users and adopt architectures that needed to serve billions of users. But most companies are still serving their 2,000 users, of which maybe 100 are logged in at the same time.
Yeah, I think there's another... I have a pet theory as well, which is that there was a, first of all, you have to admit that when the initial JavaScript libraries like Angular and so forth hit, there was a big usability issue with HTML. It was becoming, especially when, you know, because mobile apps were the other big thing. And it was obvious that the mobile apps were able to achieve a level of interactivity that the web just was not able to, given its sort of standard hypermedia control mechanism for doing things. And so these new libraries came along, but I do think that another aspect here, particularly once we got a little bit into it, was what I've called the fear of looking dumb, FOLD. I think that we as an industry have a hard time saying, hey, this is too complicated. we can't do this. It isn't worth it, because, you know, we live in an industry that highly values intelligence and cleverness and so forth. And so it's very risky to stick your neck out and say, this is too complicated. Let's do the simpler thing. So I think that was an aspect of it as well. Maybe not the primary aspect. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on at the time, but I do think that factored into it. I also think that's a problem with trying to get people to adopt HTMX today, that it just seems too simple to possibly be the right idea. You know, to me, I'm an old guy now, so I don't care. You know, don't hire me. I'm stupid. Whatever. It's fine. I've tried, and I've had to get over that fear of looking dumb as well. But at this point, I'm over it, and so. I particularly understand with the younger people in web development who put a bunch of time into these more complicated web frameworks. They look at HTMX and think to themselves, "Really? it seems a little simple." it is.
It kind of reminds me of the Brian Kernighan quote: "Debugging is twice as hard as writing the code in the first place. Therefore, if you write the code as cleverly as possible, you are by definition not smart enough to debug it." And I think that rings true.
Yeah, you know, one thing that brings back to mind for me from the past was J2EE versus Rails. If you remember that, that there was sort of the J2E world, which is super complicated and had all these roles and all this crazy stuff going on. And then the Rails community that was let's just, you know, and maybe PHP isn't even better. PHP may be to Rails what Rails is to J2E. There's sort of this scale down where people, let's just do the simplest thing that could possibly work. They're often, you know, today, even today, PHP sometimes has a bad reputation. I don't use PHP, but I think it's a great programming environment for what it's designed for. And there are going to be times when it's totally appropriate, obviously. I mean, you just have to look at the results and be like, well, all right.
Yeah, PHP has had a huge, what's the term?
Resurgence, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. Especially with things like Laravel. I think that, it could just could be a thing where people who do Laravel are so happy with it that they're very vocal about it. But I seem to hear a lot of happy people using it.
Yeah. There's something to be said for taking something simple and layering a little bit on top of it, rather than trying to go the other direction, figure out what's the platonic solution to this and then back that into a practical solution. And at some level, HTMX is that, right? It's taking HTML and layering some stuff on top of it instead of trying to say, okay, here's the framework, and then we're going to back that into HTML, which is more like what I would say React components are.
Yeah. If taking into account a lot of my listeners are .NET people, but the way I've been explaining HTMX is that it's kind of like Blazor. So it's... you don't have to do JavaScript, and it communicates using snippets of HTML. Blazor does it with its own format and with WebSockets, as opposed to HTTP and actual HTML, which HTMX. But I mean, the end results are fairly similar. But I feel that HTMX has sort of a deeper philosophical underpinning. I'm thinking about the book about hypermedia you're writing, and I forgot how to pronounce it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think HTMX, and maybe just to back up for listeners who aren't familiar with it, let me just give a quick overview of what HTMX
absolutely.
Is. Talk about the philosophical side of it. Basically, what HTMX is it's a small JavaScript library. You can use it in a no-build environment, so you can just include it as a script tag. And it lets you put annotations on HTML elements and have those elements drive hypermedia or HTML exchanges with a server. And so, So you can put an attribute on a button, for example, that says HX post, and then give it a URL. And when a user clicks on that button, it'll send a post request off to that URL. And then that URL is expected to return hypermedia or HTML. And then that button or the HTMX will take whatever the response is, and it'll insert it somewhere in the DOM. And there's, you know, attributes to control exactly where it's inserted and, you know, all sorts of how it's inserted and so forth. But it's all attribute driven, and it all sits in HTML, and it tries, I think one thing that's unique about HTMX compared to other libraries is it tries to take HTML and extend that idea. So it doesn't give you, here's like, you know, it's a Hotwire from 37 Signals is a similar library in some ways. But it has its own language around things. It has its own, it doesn't, in HTMX really looks at what HTML is and then says, okay, let's really try and build on top of that. And so, you know, I often say the generalization of HTML that HTMX gives you is that any element can become a hypermedia control. So it can make an exchange with the server, just like a link or a form can by default in HTML. And any event can trigger that interaction. So not just clicks and submits like you have with bog standard HTML. And then you can target any element in the DOM for replacement. So you don't have to refresh the whole page. You can refresh some subset of the page. And then finally, the last thing that it really fixes, in my opinion, around HTML is it lets you issue any kind of HTTP request. So you can issue deletes and stuff like that. So you can really have a rich hypermedia API, a rich hypermedia set of URLs that do all sorts of different things and take advantage of all the HTTP actions that you have. So I think, again, what's unique about HTMX is it really focuses on extending HTML, and that gives it some conceptual purity that I think makes it, if you know HTML, makes it easier to pick up than some of the other approaches that are out there. There's not a lot on top of it. The downside to that is that it doesn't provide a lot of infrastructure that other libraries might provide. So that's just the trade-off that I made when I created HTMX. But the nice thing about that, the nice thing about HTMX being so close to HTML is that you have a pretty well-developed philosophy or technical design sitting behind it, which is REST. And REST in the original sense of that term, unfortunately, that term has changed over time to mean something else. Today, REST typically means JSON APIs and so forth. But there was this original dissertation written by Roy Fielding about the web, and it was a description of the web. So when he coined the term REST in his dissertation. And at the time, he was describing the web as it was initially built. So there were no AJAX APIs, JSON didn't exist yet. This was a description of the original web. And one of the key concepts in there is what you mentioned earlier, HEDIOS, which is an acronym which stands for Hypermedia as the Engine of Application State. And again, this is getting a little philosophical, and I know some people don't like this, but I do think it's good to have a philosophy for your library. And obviously the web has been very successful, so there's something to this to this design of the web. But to kind of give your listeners the most succinct description I can of this very misunderstood term, hadios. The idea with it is effectively that when you get a hypermedia response, in contrast with a JSON response, for the most part, there's some quibbles around that, but for the most part, when you're looking at a JSON response versus a hypermedia response, the real core distinction between those two things is that the hypermedia response, the HTML that you get back from a server, contains all the actions that you can perform on the data that it's streaming down within it. And so you've got links and buttons and forms and so forth that tell you not just like, here, show this contact, but also here are the things you can do with this contact. And that's in contrast with your typical JSON API, which returns just raw contact information. And it's up to the client side to render that into useful information. And so Hadios is this hypermedia as the engine of application state is a constraint that says, okay, if you're building a RESTful system, you need to have these self-describing messages where the client, in this case, the web browser, doesn't need to know the details of the internals. All it needs to have is an understanding of what hypermedia is, of what HTML is, and how to render it. And given that, then it can render anything. And so the point that I've made before, the amazing thing about the browser, particularly if you told someone in, say, 1980, you told someone in 1980, hey, you're going to use the same piece of software to talk to your bank, the phone company, your church, your utilities, your auto dealership, your communication with your friends. You're going to get the same piece of software that does all of that. They would have said you're crazy, because back then you had specialized clients that knew, you know, and as much as anyone had clients at that point, they were all thick clients that, or not all, but for the most part, were thick clients that talked to a specific data store. And so the web came along and really provided this higher level generalization of hypermedia that let you build anything you wanted to on top of it. And it's inefficient in some ways. That's one thing that Fielding noted in his dissertation, is this is a less efficient way of building client server systems in some ways. The trade-off is that you have a much more flexible system. And I think you can see the evidence for that by the fact that so many different pieces of software have been built on and deployed on the web. And so to take it all the way back, sorry, I got a little off track there, but to take it all the way back to what you were saying, I think that HTMX, more so than other libraries, embraces and also emphasizes this philosophical concept of the original idea of REST and Hadios, or the hypermedia constraint, as Roy Fielding calls it.
I feel like the way hypermedia has sort of been forgotten is like functional programming in the 70s. Like there was a lot of cool stuff done like 50 years ago, and then it fell out of fashion. And now it's starting to resurface in like mainstream programming languages. And I'm wondering if perhaps HTMX is like the first resurgence of hypermedia.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. There's the technology industry has a bad, maybe bad is the wrong term, but has a tendency to not look backwards very much, right? We tend to be very forward facing. What's the next thing? And in general, that makes it, and it depends on the industry. Like web development is really forward looking. Maybe like operating systems aren't quite so. There's a little bit more of a sense of continuity in that world. But certainly in the web development world, we've been very forward looking and always been looking for what's the next thing. And programming languages, I can see that too. So I do think that there's an opportunity for looking back at some older ideas. Like I'm a big fan, for example, of HyperCard, which was an old programming language for the Mac. And I work on a scripting language, kind of a side project or a sister project of HTMX called HyperScript. which is based on that language. And I just think there's a lot of great old technology you can look back and be like, man, that was super cool. One that I often mention was the Visual Basic 6 or Visual Basic for Applications debugger is still the best debugger I've ever used in my life. You know, you could set a breakpoint whenever you wanted to. You could drag the program counter around wherever, you rewrite code on the fly. It was unbelievable. And I've never had a debugging experience like that. I was in 98 or something like that when I was doing that.
The .NET debugger has just caught up with that,
yeah,
like recently.
Exactly. Yep. And so you really have these. I'm a JetBrains guy. I typically program in Java or Python or whatever, and they do a great job, but they're constrained by the underlying VMs as to what they can get away with when it comes to debugging. And so I've seen this multiple times now in the tech world where it's just this inexplicable gap where things were awesome. Things just got kind of, they went away for a while. You just don't get that anymore. And so it's given, I think that experience has given me a little bit of a different perspective on the technology world. Another one I can remember is for a long time, there was one cord from your monitor to your laptop. Apple had the Apple ADC, whatever that was called, where there's one cord and you plugged in your new computer and everything worked. And then that went away for like a decade and a half. Now we finally have it back with USB-C. So it's one cord again. I'm like, oh man, how did we put up with this? Like two cords, you're like tripping over one and the whole time. It's just pretty funny how the tech world, you think of it as like, oh, it's just this steady increasing, curve. But if you're around long enough, you see some things come and go that you're like, man, that was way better than what we've got now.
It's like a sine wave that's like slowly incrementing upwards.
Yeah.
But getting back to Hypermedia, you're actually writing a book together with, I'm going to butcher their names, Dennis Aksimsek, sorry, and Adam Stepinski.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We've been working on that book now. We were in contract with a publishing company to write the book. And then they got halfway into it and did some market research and just felt like there wasn't enough. They weren't going to sell enough copies to make it worth it for them to continue with the project, but they were nice enough to release it to us. And so they released it to us and we've got it up on a website for free. You can go to hypermedia.systems, and it's kind of an overview of how Hypermedia works, what the main core ideas are. And then it walks through a Python based Flask web 1.0 style application, just to give people who've never seen that style of application before a chance to see how you might build an app like that. That's part one. And then part two is using HTMX to improve that that web application. So, web 1.0 applications were Hypermedia based, but they were clunky. And HTMX attempts to address that clunkiness while still remaining in the Hypermedia architecture of the web. And so we go through and, add things like active search. So as you type a contact name, it'll filter down the contact list sort of on the fly and so forth. And all that's achieved using HTMX and sort of the standard Hypermedia approach of the web. And then the third section uses is written by Adam Stepinski, and that's using a mobile Hypermedia that he created called Hyperview. Which is much more involved than HTMX. HTMX is a very easy thing for most web developers to pick up. Hyperview, on the other hand, it's a bigger commitment, but it's a mobile hypermedia. So it's a hypermedia that's tuned specifically for mobile applications, and it comes with its own client. It's much more ambitious, and in my mind, it's a much more innovative project than HTMX is. Certainly a lot more work than HTMX was. Adam's a very sharp guy, but he wanted the advantages of Hypermedia on mobile, but you can't just use HTML on mobile because you don't get as much. There's stuff you just don't get. So he wanted that native Hypermedia that really could integrate with the mobile environment a lot more tightly. And so that's his project. So it's a good book. It's available for free. I'm hoping to have it. I've been working to try and get the editing done and just get everything. I sometimes I'm a little too punchy in my language, so I'm trying to tone it down a little bit so it's not I don't want to alienate people. We're trying to get it into shape, and hopefully we'll have it available for sale, at the end of the month. And it's going to be, we're only going to publish it, in hard copy. So it's going to be a premium product because we're going to keep all the content free anyways. So, you'll be able to buy it as an ebook too, but we're going to do, so it'll be free on the web and then an ebook version of it and then a hard copy version of it.
Cool. Looking forward to leafing through a hard copy.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
It's been a minute since I've read a physical book, so looking forward to
it.
We're
going old school. We're going back. We're going to do it the old way.
But circling back to HTMX, the project has recently been accepted to the GitHub Accelerator program. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, it's been great. I applied as a joke, so I didn't expect to get in. It was funny. I emailed Dennis and I'm like, "Hey, you want to do this?" And he's like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "Yep, believe it or not, we got accepted." So, the HTMX has grown extremely quickly as measured by GitHub stars. So that's a vanity metric, admittedly. But it's at, I think, close to 12,000, if not more, GitHub stars at this point. And, which is, that's not nothing. And I think that caught their eye. And then I think having that philosophical underpinning gave me the ability to sort of use some language in my application that really helped sell the idea that this isn't just some random guy with a random library. There's something deeper going on here. We got accepted and it's been a great experience so far. A lot of questions around sustainability, like how do you sustain an open source project? I think that's probably the number one thing that I see people trying to figure out. And it's tough, with Caleb Porzio, for example, who's the creator of Alpine JS, came in and he's done an absolutely amazing job of setting it up such that Alpine JS can be what he does full time. I have a hard time. You're good at what you're good at. And I'm listening to what he did to make that happen. I'm not sure I've got the same. He's got a ton of charisma and, so forth. And I don't know if I'd be able to replicate what he's done. My hope is at some point I can actually build an app with HTMX that makes reasonable money, but it is hard with all the other stuff that's going on to think about trying to find the time for that. So, I think I'll probably end up teaching for a while and just doing some consulting to see if I can keep the ship afloat. But yeah, it's been, again, a great experience. And obviously, publicity is really good. I get to put a GitHub logo up on my site and so forth.
Yeah, I've had several Swedish GitHub open source celebrities, air quotes, and they all consult on the side to make ends meet. With the exception of Daniel Stenberg. He actually lives 10 minutes from me, the author of Curl. He does Curl full time. Yeah. But he's one of the few people who can do that.
Yeah, I think if you hit, you just have to hit the right, it's so random, it seems to me. Like you have to be in the right place, you have to know the right people, and then these things tend to snowball. I've just never, I'm really good. I think I'm really good. One of my skills is being kind of silly on Twitter. And I don't think that's necessarily going to drive a lot of revenue. I think people with money are going to look at that and be like, no, we're not giving that guy any money. And that's, that's probably a good thing, to be honest with you. Cause it's better that I have to work and, I'd love to have more time. I look at the backlog at HTMX and I'm just like, oh God, oh no. especially just lately, I've had a bunch of stuff going on kind of that's not technical related. But I think, come this fall and once I get this book out and can take a breath, I think I'll be in a spot where I've got enough time and it probably would be bad if I just sat around thinking about HTMX. I'd make it too complicated or something.
Speaking of being silly on the internet, I'm not on Twitter anymore, but anyone who is, I highly encourage you to take a look at the HTMX official Twitter account. It's meme driven PR. It's hilarious, and I highly recommend it. But one thing in the same vein that really struck a chord with me was the Grug-brained developer.
Sure.
And not just me. I have a lot of friends who I've shown it, and they thought it was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, Grugbrain developer. You can go to grugbrain.dev, and that was like a one day. Who was I talking to? I think my friend Johan, and I consult with him. He's got a Comspace as a business down in South Africa, and miracle of the internet, dude. Montana is working with a guy in South Africa and a guy in Turkey all at the same time. So we just were having a conversation, and I think I found a random image of a caveman with a keyboard. I was like, you know what? That would be pretty funny if I just took every like stupid thing that I've learned in my idiotic computer programming career and every mistake and just made a caveman rant out of it. And so I did that, and I threw it up on grugbrain.dev, and man, oh man, I'll tell you what, that thing got more upvotes than HTMX ever did on Hacker News. So, when 1,000 years from now, when no one's heard of HTMX or cares, or, you know, we're all flying through virtual space and our VR headsets or brain jacks or whatever, like, someone's still going to be looking at grugbrain.dev, I hope. And I'm obviously I like humor. And, so I tried to be pretty funny in it. And, but I think there's some good stuff in there, you know, it's for me anyways, this is kind of a distillation of what I've learned as a computer programmer over the last, let's see, I just turned 47. So I started programming around 15. So, you know, 30 plus years of computer programming, just focusing on keeping things simple, as simple as possible. That fear of looking dumb, there's a section on it. Just a lot of, you know, random observations around things. So, but it's been a lot of fun. It's been pretty funny to see the people who like it. Great. And I also really enjoy the people who hate it. And they make good points. There's a time for the grug brain developer, and there's a time for the big brain developer. So it's all good. I get it. You know, a lot of it depends on context, but it is fun.
The funny thing about that article is people who I'd consider big brain developers, to borrow a phrase from the article, say they that the article resonates with them. So it's pretty interesting that everyone thinks they're down to earth,
yeah,
simple programmer.
yeah. The dangerous ones are the people who think they're big brain developers, but they're not. And that's what I was for probably about the first decade of my computer programming career. Oh man, I'm so smart. And then finally enough of my clever code came back to bite me that I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop doing this. So yeah, it's but you know, again, I was shocked at the success of it, but even more so than HTMX, because I put it up mainly as a joke just for my buddy Johan. I was like, hey, what do you think? And he was like, oh, this is great. You should post it to Hacker News. It's like, nah. And then someone else did, got like over 1,000 upvotes. Of course, pour my life into HTMX and trying to convince people that hypermedia is a reasonable approach to modern web apps, and then something that I just knocked out in a weekend as a joke ends up being that's the way the ball bounces in this world, you know. It's all right.
I actually printed a bunch of stickers with the URL and the caveman, and
nice.
I'm handing it out to people. Unfortunately, my kids found my sticker stash, so now the local elementary school is full of Grugbrain stickers.
There you go. Perfect. So, I should do a book for. I'd probably do way better if I just made a book out of Grugbrain developer, like a kid's book, like a little.
My kids would love it.
Yeah, that would be pretty funny. Maybe I'll find someone who can do that. I'm not sure I have time for it.
So what's up next for HTMX?
What's up next for HTMX? Well, we're going to work on 2.0. I was supposed to have started it already, but like I said, I've had some non-technical things going on in my life that have just unfortunately taken up way more time than I wanted to. But we've got a pretty good sense of what HTMX2 is going to look like. It's going to be very similar to HTMX1. We're not going to do one thing that has always bothered me about the JavaScript world is that there's this, you know, whenever there's a new version, they change everything. And so HTMX2 is going to be almost API identical to HTMX1. Certainly, like within, you know, the vast majority of attributes that are available in HTMX, you're not going to see any changed behavior. But we are hoping to clean up the internals. So HTMX1 is, in theory, Internet Explorer compatible. We try not to use IE incompatible JavaScript code, and we're going to drop that for HTMX2. It's actually very hard to test Internet Explorer these days. So I'm not even sure if HTMX1 is Internet Explorer compatible anymore. We attempt to, and we'll address bugs that come up if IE users have them. But with HTMX2, we're going to set that aside. And so that'll let us clean up a few things. We can use some JavaScript APIs that we can't in IE. We're going to clean up the plugin API. We've got enough experience now with plugins that I think we can rejigger that a little bit and make some of the stuff that right now is in the special internal plugin API just part of the public API so everyone can use them. You just kind of want to wait and let things settle down before you make a public commitment to things. What else? We're going to pull one of the aspects of this is that server send event support and WebSocket event are getting pulled out to extensions rather than being part of the core library. And that is because to do those right requires a fair amount of code. And I don't want most people, when they use HTMX, don't use WebSockets or server send events. And so I don't want those people to have to pay that price for those features just because, you know, if you're smart enough to use server send events, you're smart enough to include a plugin or an extension for HTMX. That'll be part of it. And then another big thing that I'm not 100% convinced we're going to do it, but I'd really like to if we can afford to, is a merge-based swap. So what that will be is right now, the way HTMX works is, let's go back to that button that issued a post to a server and get some HTML back. Well, as it stands right now, you have a few different options for putting that HTML into the DOM. You can target, you know, any element in the DOM, say via a CSS selector. And then you can say, okay, I want to replace the inner HTML of that. So I want you to put the HTML inside of it. Or I want you to put it out on the outside. I want you to actually replace that element with that. So those are two different types of swaps. And then there's also a bunch of other ones. Like you can say, put it after it or before it or at the start of it or at the end of it. Like just a bunch of different little options that are all part of the core JavaScript DOM API offers all these different ways to insert content. So what a merge is a merge says, okay, we've got the old HTML at this position and we've got this new HTML. And what I want to do is I want to take that new HTML and I want to merge it in to this existing HTML where if a node matches up in the new HTML with the existing HTML, it instead of putting a new node into the DOM, we just take the attributes on that element and put them into the existing element. So we sync it more rather than replace it. And the advantage of that is that if you do a merge with an existing DOM, you don't lose state. When you're swapping in new content, you lose state, unfortunately. So the parent nodes of elements, so like a video, if you have a YouTube video, right, and you move that video from point A to point B in the DOM, as soon as you remove it from the DOM, it loses all its video state. And so it basically restarts the video or freezes the video. Very annoying. And it's one problem that HTMX still has. With HTMX, if you have a video, typically you have to be really careful to like target around it and like not mess with it. Because as soon as you pull that thing out of the DOM, you're in trouble. And so I've been working on a side project alongside HTMX called Ideomorph, which is it's based on the Morphdom JS algorithm, which is this idea of how to merge HTML into another, like some new HTML into a DOM. And I took that and I tried to improve the merging algorithm a little bit to make it a little bit smarter using something called ID sets. And so my hope for HTMX2 is that we can include that out of the box as a merge, as a swap option. So you can say, I want you to do this and I want you to use HX. I want you to use merge. So the attribute that drives this is HX swap. So it would be HX-swap equals and then merge. And then we'll do this merge algorithm, which will make a lot of patterns much simpler for people. You don't have to do all this fancy pants targeting and something called out of band swaps, somewhat advanced features of HTMX that I'd like for most people to not have to deal with. I think my hope is that the merge, a merge swap will let people not have to worry about that complexity so much. So those are the big ones.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of cool stuff is coming. And you said later this year?
Yeah, in my mind, we'll see. But if I could have like a beta of HTMX2 available in my winter of this year, that would be good.
Awesome. Well, I have. It's been great talking to you. It's really interesting to hear about HTMX and hypermedia and memes. And I'd like to finish up. What's your favorite HTMX meme?
Oh, my favorite HTMX meme. I think I've got to go. Well, there was the original one, which is the original header, which was that sort of like web development in 2008. And then web development in 2018, mm-hmm. where it was like diagrams showing one that was super simple and one that was incredibly complex. And then, you know, and then I've got HTML, you know, web development in 2023, and it's back to the original one, but with the JavaScript branch removed. So it's even simpler. I think that's a good one. That was sort of the original one. But the one that I think I have to say I like the best is the Who Will Win meme, which has like an army, like a Greek army behind a Roman army behind a Goliath, you know, warrior with a head that's React, one then with a head that's Angular, and it's like Google and Facebook, and then just this sort of awkward looking guy with a party hat on saying, you guys should try hypermedia. And so that Who Will Win meme, I think, is a pretty funny. That's the one that makes me laugh the most when I go back through the memes. If you're interested in the memes, you can go to hmx.org/essays, and there's a whole section that's dedicated to memes in it. So
we'll link to all those in the show notes, of course.
Sure.
One final thing, if people are interested in learning more about HTMX, maybe get involved in the community, where can they go?
Well, the HTMX website is htmx.org, and there's a /talk section, and there's a link to the Discord. And the Discord is probably the most active community that we have. I have mixed feelings about that because Discord is closed source and it does, you know, there's a lot of issues with it. Just like I have, you know, Twitter is kind of brutal because you never know what's going to happen with that platform. At this point, unfortunately, these appear to be the least worst options for where HTMX is. And so, but the Discord, you can also just go to htmx.org/Discord and it'll bounce you out to join the Discord if you have that client. So that's a pretty good, friendly community. A lot of people who know the software pretty well and can help out. A lot of different communities. So we have a whole section of our Discord that's dedicated to various languages using HTMX. So there's a .NET HTMX channel for people that are focused on that. There's an OCaml, you know, Haskell, Java, Python, a lot of Clojure guys, a lot of Go people. And so forth. And so that's something that we really stress in the HTMX community is this, hey, we're all helping each other. We use different languages. There doesn't need to be a rivalry necessarily between Java and .NET like there used to be. Like we're all using hypermedia. a lot of these languages have very similar features anyways. And so let's just, you know, we can collaborate a little bit here, which is something I really like about that community. There is, you know, there's some pretty good off-topic conversations as well, you know, and so I think that's probably the best place if you're looking to talk to people about it, to get on. And, you know, there's a pretty active community there.
And while we're on the topic, I'd like to just drop a mention to any .NET developers, is that this guy Khalid from JetBrains has a really good tutorial on using HTMX in .NET, and he's made some NuGet packages to make that easier as well. So we'll link to that as well.
Yeah, Khalid's awesome. He's been a huge, and I have to say, JetBrains does sponsor HTMX, so I'm very thankful to them. They've been great. They were our first major corporate sponsor for the project, and so they sponsored us through GitHub sponsors, which was a really big deal. It made me like, now there is, like, you know, some money that's coming in to help support the development. So I use their tools, and I really appreciate that they did that.
All right, Carson, thank you so much for talking to me. It was super interesting, and I'm looking forward to all the cool stuff that's coming from you in the coming months.
Great. Yeah, this is awesome. Thank you very much for thinking of me, and I'm happy to talk to anybody. If there's anybody out there, you know, jump on the Discord. My handle on Discord is 1CG, same thing on GitHub. You can just add me, and I'm happy to chat. There's lots of other people who are way smarter than me. They can chat with you about hypermedia if you're into the more philosophical stuff too.
All right. Great. Thanks.
Yep.
Take care.
Cheers.